Zoom record. Okay. My name is John Case, and you're listening to the Winners and Losers radio program, normally broadcasting live at 10 a.m. on Fridays, but this morning disrupted and going at noon. So we're, what is it now? I guess we're almost exactly 12 hours. Was that right? 12 hours. Yeah, we're almost exactly 12 hours from the expiration of the UAW national contracts with Ford, GM, and Chrysler. Not quite sure who owns Chrysler right now, but I should look that up. Anyway, apparently there's a rolling strike is what the way it's been started at all three companies, I believe, but and I suppose that's going to tempt the company to, how long is it going to hang around losing money? And a lot of times, if you can do a rolling strike, in other words, you don't have to pay out as many strike benefits as long as most of your members are still working and the company is being, let us say, tactically or strategically, maybe both, targeted, to put pressure on them to change their bargaining stance. Of course, if the, there's a counter to everything in warfare, whether it's economic or military or whatever else. And this starts to turn into something pretty close to warfare the longer it goes on. And of course, the union is trying to catch up from basically wage cuts from, here's Karen, and of almost 40% of loss in real income over the pandemic and the inflation period. So, and plus they're looking at losing jobs, not gaining jobs from the conversion to electric vehicles. So anyway, they've been on strike for 12 hours and they're going to do rolling strikes. And Karen is now logging in from a place that I'll bet dogs and or cats are hanging out. I'm not sure. Anyway.
What makes you think that?
Well, it's just, a pattern. Animals are noted for their ability to recognize patterns. For example, when I am throwing the frisbee to Lukey, which I was doing this morning. By the way, I found a smaller frisbee, which she likes better. The big one, she has a hard time figuring out how she's supposed to put it in her mouth to bring it back to me. She had no problem.
I noticed it has to be placed perfectly.
Yeah, and sometimes
she has to move it around and figure it out before she'll pick it up and bring it back.
And occasionally she has to stick her nose through the middle of it, which is odd, to me. But anyway, I don't have a snout quite the same size as hers, so maybe that's why I'm blind to the.
That's point. Probably a good thing. I'm not sure if you'd have a wife if you had a snout as big as hers.
But I could pretend to be grandma to Little Red Riding Hood. What big eyes do you have, grandma? Right? What big ears? Anyway, but when I'm doing that, and all of a sudden, our neighboring dog, Lily, appears on the scene. All discipline is dropped. And, there's this thing that happens along the fence. I can't tell who's goading who. whether it's the Lily, our neighboring dog, is a big German Shepherd and seems to be the smarter of the two at one level, because she sees that our dog, Lukey, a short thing, looks like a sausage, a brindle sausage or something. Anyway, is running at 100 miles an hour. I mean, just running her little legs. You know, you'd think there was a hamster cage involved or something. It was just staggering to think about all this energy her little body is running back and forth. And the dog on the other side says, you know, I don't need to run quite as far as that dog's. I can keep this going without expending that much energy. But then, you know, I say to Lugie, okay, it's time to go in. Son of a gun, she stops right there. And maybe she's exhausted at that point, you know, chasing the Brisby and then chasing Lily around. But anyway, so that's what happened this morning. I found out the dog does follow directions.
I think she just likes the. I think she likes the cool linoleum floor in your kitchen. I think it has nothing to do with your commands.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yes, I know. Right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, she's right here at my feet. but that's because Carol's up in Vermont. Oh, actually, I think she's in. She's headed to Montreal now. See our daughter. By the way, there's been a huge scandal at the Unity Gaming Company where my daughter is working right now. And the scandal is that they're the biggest gaming platform for people who want to build games on the Microsoft platform. Okay. Primarily on the Microsoft.
Okay. And
most gamers, except those that are producing it for iPhone, they do, you know, use it. So anyway, it's the biggest one around, and they did a Netflix on all their users, which is to say, we noticed that our customers are sharing passwords because we got connections coming in, same guy, 20 different machines that's showing up in the server logs, you know. So and they changed it. Now they start cutting out machines as and when you've reached your whatever they have the limit set to now. I think it's 5 anyway, and they're going to change it because you know, it's what is it, $10, $11, $12, $13 a month for every account. All right. So then Unity changes its business model because they see that a lot of people are being given logins to these very expensively built programs and games on different platforms, right? And are different machines, different client machines. And so they changed the business model around to charge people. Well, the gamers went nuts apparently yesterday, day before yesterday when this happened. Nuts. It's causing a huge upheaval in the company now. Somebody didn't figure out how to communicate the change in the business model. So
were they actually to the point that they were going to enforce, you know, how Netflix said they know about everybody sharing passwords, and then there were several months.
And so then they try to roll it back, right?
So they were going to start enforcing it.
They did start. Mm-hmm. They have been enforcing it. And of course, that's, you know, I noticed when Netflix did it, you didn't see the same reaction. The gamers must be a little different constituency of some kind. I don't know. But and plus, these are also not just players of games, because they're not as affected as the actual gaming companies that make games on this platform. Okay. They're the ones that get charged, I think, considerable amount of extra money. But then, you know, whatever. And it's just a lot of turmoil.
Well, it's that, you know, there's some just human nature in that. You know, we all we all are very used to speed limits. We only get pissed off about them when they're enforced.
Well, I'm old enough to, when I get past at 110 miles an hour, you know, I engage in some, you know, road rage, you know, mainly out of panic, you know, but
not healthy.
And also I noticed that there's so little enforcement now of anything of reckless driving. I mean, I see a lot of reckless driving. I don't see very many patrolling cops around the county, except time to check inspections and registration stickers. Because that's
It's only if I'm in, if I'm around. I'm the magnet. Well, yeah. I always get pulled over for anything and everything.
Really?
That's terrible. Oh yeah, I'm the worst. Like, I tell people, like, oh, I got pulled over because I had my phone sitting on my shoulder. Literally, the clip on my cell phone holder in my car had just broken. So while mom was sick, if she called, I would lay it on my shoulder because I can only hear out of one ear. And so I just put it on speakerphone and lay it on my shoulder. And a cop saw the phone lying on my shoulder. And he pulled me over and wanted to give me the ticket. And I said, I wasn't touching it. It was just sitting on my shoulder because that's the only ear I can hear out of. He thought I was making it up. And then I said, look, this is my cell phone holder. The clip just broke 2 days ago. My mom is sick. I always pick up if my mom calls. And he was like, I'm sorry. You're getting a ticket. You were on the phone. I said, but I wasn't holding it. It's as if it were in a holder. It was just on the speaker. And so he called for backup. And
well, because you were arguing with him?
I was very dangerous. Well, I wasn't arguing. I was just telling the truth, honestly. And luckily the chief in Shepherdstown knows me. And he was like, oh yeah, she is completely deaf in one ear. I know her. I've seen her with the, you know, phone on her shoulder before. And the other cop was like, well, why don't you have Bluetooth? I said, well, this is the vehicle that I work in, and it's a 1998 4Runner. I don't know. I get, he said, well, they can retrofit that, like, whoever they are. I'm like, okay, dude. I'm on it.
He was preparing his defense.
Yeah, that's,
you know, for wasting time. That's what he was doing.
Yeah, that stuff happens to me all the time. I'm just very used to it.
Yeah,
like I'm the one that Netflix will come and like take away in handcuffs because I shared my password.
I think I haven't been stopped. I drive around. It turns out I was driving around Carol's car and my own truck illegally for months. No one ever stops me. And
I guess, Lord,
old white guys.
I hate these stories.
Another thing, you know. And I mean, I know if I was like my son, he borrowed the truck. I said, well, you know, it needs to be inspected. Oh, I won't worry. He gets stopped. Like yesterday, they were diagnosed.
Of course.
And I want to get it. I guess I'll go to that cool green place. You know, I got a little bit of resistance to Shepherdstown business a little bit, but you know, they always.
I'll give you some advice off air. You know, you can call me later on some car advice.
Okay. Anyway, you know,
it's human nature. There are always rules, but the rules get broken, and it's just like we get mad when they're enforced. I get enforcing rules. You know, the Netflix thing, I mean, everybody in my family, I should be able to share. We all share my Prime account. You know, Amazon isn't doing that to us yet. I guess they will maybe soon.
They haven't done it to me either. And
I don't know.
I noticed they did. We did have like six people on our Netflix thing. And because Carol sometimes stays overnight downtown at a friend of ours in Northeast Washington, and she let him use her Netflix account, you know, as part of the, you know, cheap rent, basically, you know, for our friend.
Sure.
Anyway, and I noticed they cut him off, and they cut also. Carol had me and our son, and I think maybe our granddaughter also, whatever on it. I can't remember. Anyway, they cut me off. You know, I had to get back.
Well, what surprises me is everybody lives transient lifestyles. It's like, if you follow me, I'm logging in from who knows where at any point in time.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, it's not always on my device. I can be, you know, I dog sit all over the place, and I can, you know,
use
log
the,
in. So
some of the computer that where you're staying. Yeah.
It's a little bit of an imperfect, it's a little bit of an imperfect enforcement system, I think.
Well, if you use somebody else's computer, and like, for example, the browser is usually reflecting that user's activity, right? I mean, it has a cache, mm-hmm. It has a cookie store. I mean, all the place, all that stuff happens on that computer. And so if some other user gets on the computer and doesn't start a new profile on the browser, then the data will reflect, well, two different people, you know, whatever. But and sometimes that creates security issues, obviously, but anyway.
Yeah.
That's not going to be, there's no
reason. I'm all about a low profile nowadays.
Well, how can you live without being connected though now? I mean, you could, but this, it's going to be more and more work.
It's a lot of work. I mean, I'm not on any social media. It's been hard the past couple of weeks with everything going on. But there are a few people in the group that do pick up the phone and call me or text me with updates, because I'm not on social media.
Right.
I mean, it's a great tool. It really is. But, you know, with my friend dying, I have felt a little bit out of the loop and alone. But at the same time, I think it would have been not great for my psyche to be as in the loop as everybody else either. So
yeah.
It's kind of I don't know. This has been an interesting situation where I'm weighing the benefits and and detriments of how much I want to know, you know, and how much I want, like, you know, it's just been hard.
Overexposure.
So, my friend that was murdered was a prominent Capitol Hill photographer, and I knew him in a very familial way and in a very personal way. His pomp and circumstance of who he was beautiful and has a great story about it. But I know him more from being just kind of like a brother to me and sharing family. And I'm the caregiver to his kid. He was a single dad, and I care for his kids. And so I don't know, just everything was overwhelming. And I don't know if I could have even handled the past week and a half if I was on Facebook, you know, I wonder how people do it.
Was it a personal kind of thing, or was he good? What are the details?
It was a very personal attack from someone who he had never met, but he was ambushed at his house, and I'm only allowed to say what is public. He was ambushed at his house and killed there. And his body was taken across state lines into Pennsylvania and disposed of. And yeah. And but the killer was very he was a distinguished Marine. He was a distinguished Marine. Very distinguished, but he was his ex-wife's boyfriend. So it had a domestic theme to it.
Oh dear.
And very personal. Yeah. But they had never met. Yeah, I think that's what I can say.
Wow. That's horrible. It's just, you know, the level of violence is just
absolutely horrible.
I don't,
there's a wonderful, wonderful story about him in the Washington Post. Sunday's edition of the Post did a beautiful story on him that did not focus on the murder. It focused more on who he was as a person. And he was just a great soul. Certainly a loss for everybody, especially everybody in D.C. when D.C., you know, just like a lot of urban areas, struggle with interracial and positive vibes, the whole thing. Yeah, he's a huge loss for that community.
Well, one of the biggest issues facing all these communities is the what is happening with the immigrants coming into in large numbers, and there's a immigration law that won't process them to get a visa, you know, with which they would have to have in order to legally work. Okay. And also there is a part of the deferred action program where, you know, we're going to deport you, but not today. but anyway, while you're here, the government is currently required to, well, there's a statute that says they're not allowed to be homeless. Someone has to house them. And this, but there's no funding for that. So this ends up being funded by the cities, you know, big cities mostly, you know, New York, Washington, you know. And so they have a situation where they have thousands of immigrant people coming in. They can't work, but you have to pay for their housing. So that fills up hotels, which was not a problem during the pandemic, but is now. Well, you could see how that could get, you know, bad in a hurry, and it is. And yet a federal judge just yesterday struck down any effort to reform the work visa situation. Just killed it.
Right.
So
I know.
What are these people supposed to do? They can't go back. They can't stay. They can't work. But someone's got them a room in a motel someplace. Okay. So.
And everybody wants to complain that we're supporting them. You know, I've never met an immigrant that doesn't want to work. You know, it should be, more than anything, it should be a fast track program, because
you think.
I, in my personal experience, they're here to work.
and plus the places they're coming from, the immigrant population, you know, there's an awful lot of semi-failed states, many of whom are the result of the tender loving care of previous U.S. well, I don't know what the right word is, multinational corporation domains. You know, your job as a Caribbean island is to deliver salt. That's your job. Or fruit, or that, you know, that's your job. Don't get out of line, you know. And by the way, I know you have a government, but you're not allowed to tax American business interests without you know, calling your New York banker first. So anyway, so they got all these, all this. So you really, you know, you're creating the problem. They're all, the homeland is either compromised or in some cases just failed, you know, and where are you going to go? Well, let's go where the source of all this, you know, both the wealth and the poverty seem to be in America. Let's go there, you know, and then you have.
And it's can't handle just, it. There is no problem getting solved. And, you know, I'm tired of it being a partisan problem because nobody's been able to solve it. It goes beyond party lines. I mean, you look back at all of the I'm calling them regimes at this point. Nobody can solve it. It's complex, and if we don't start looking at it as humanitarian, then, you know, the partisan thing is not going to solve this problem.
Right. And in the middle of
you know,
all,
and we have a hard time with that. We have such a difficult time with that in our own political system, recognizing how much poverty within the United States with United States citizens is already a huge problem. So we haven't even begun to spiritually grow through this process.
Well, but look, we despite these little problems we have, I think it's very important that we recommend that every country in the world adopt our political system. Because obviously it's superior to everything. I mean, if you don't have a Republican Party in your country, maybe you should get one.
Because ours is great.
Ours is really super. It's unusual too.
I want to ask you what you thought, and you may not even watch this. I came across it just happenstance. Did you see Mitt Romney speaking a couple of days ago?
Oh my God. I just read about it this morning. Yeah. Oh, he's
unloading. Oh my gosh. It was earth shattering. And I have opinions about it, but I was impressed. I was impressed because it was refreshing.
Right.
I'm not saying I agree with everything he said, but that he actually, Mitt Romney came from a place of like his own truth that was not propaganda, that was not rhetoric about from his party. He actually spoke his mind. And I thought, gosh, that is the refreshing part of this. I don't care if he was a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, up your ass, whatever. He actually spoke from his heart and mind about where he thinks we are. And I think that just really shocked me and was I took a step back
the most
moment,
surprising
you know?
Thing. Was when he was recalling all the people who came up to him and said, you know, I wish I could say that. Well, why don't you say it? You know, about the stupidity of most of the stuff that Trump was ever saying, you know. And, you know, but that question remains unanswered. Why is it that you, so-and-so congressman from Oklahoma, you have to jump up and down and cheer at everything he says, no matter how ridiculous or false or just plain, you know, pointless, you know, that it just, you know, it
whatever.
What a rut.
I felt a little bit disappointed that what struck me so much was not the content, but that he was actually being a human being. Like, I'm like, this is really sad that is what is striking me about quote unquote public servant, you know, somebody who is elected into office, like that. I was so taken aback that somebody was finally being real.
Yeah. I mean,
and I think
he did it
that
the day
is the sadness,
right?
Yeah.
He's not going to run again. That was part of his announcement. Mm-hmm. Right? He's not going to run again.
Yeah. He's not real. Exactly. Yep.
So he's now free.
Yeah, you should listen to the whole thing. It was.
I will. Yeah, it sounds.
Yeah, and he talked about age. He talked about you know, one of the things, and I've even talked about this in our own county and in Jefferson County, our own state in West Virginia. I mean, we are all sunk. We are all sunk if we don't get young voters on board, and Mitt Romney addressed that. In his comments, that, you know, you should read the whole thing. He talked about that. He said, you know, I should make way for new people. Joe Biden should make way for new people. Donald Trump, like everybody, we need to get young voters on board. Where are we going to be, you know, with a society of people that just really don't give a crap, you know?
Do you think that?
And, it was.
Let me ask you, though, don't you feel, though, that, I mean, just I'm defending a conservative, I don't know, sensibility, maybe a little bit, because I feel that the system, the government system in the United States is becoming fragile. I mean, its ability to respond to despite having tremendous resources in many ways, its ability to respond to all these antagonistic social problems that seems to be coming up, and they're different kinds of problems. I mean, the murders are one thing, you know, the gaps in equality, the fact that people are just yelling at each other, you know, the media concentration on basically entertainment, getting just reactions, right? It doesn't seem, you know, or climate change, right? You see, people know that you have to move on it, but you take a move, like, for example, you're going to hand over several billion dollars to the energy and automobile companies to modernize. Okay, and to go in a green direction. But you don't really have many control over what these companies actually are going to do with the money, okay, or whether they're actually going to produce a car. For example, the head of GM, you know, has a big question, you know, was questioned on a Bloomberg I saw it the other day about what. Are you really going to be able to compete with the Chinese electric car, regardless of whether you agree with the union position on stuff that's going to supposed to be under the contract versus stuff that's not?
Right. Like, is it going to be successful
you agree or not?
End. Yeah. Like,
I mean, are you working competitively really in that direction? And are you telling the truth about what it would take to so-called win that competition, if that's what you really want to do, you know, build more electric cars. And, you know, what does it mean if you're going to build them, but you're still going to be having this situation where you go through 5 years of a pandemic and inflation and the companies make 40% more profits. You didn't make any additional wage increases because of inflation, you're making almost 35 or 40, almost 40% less in real money than you were making at the beginning. Okay. Never mind the inequities of having two people doing the same job, you know, being paid making half of what the other is making, which is makes, you know, you can't have a union and do that. Okay. It just there's no way to explain it as making sense or being justified. So you have these existential issues, you know, and there's no way out. And I can't believe the big three. That's the problem. So you take these guys on in a big way, they will, they'll turn it around and take you on. They will. And you better the members help the members resolve is strong. And the other thing is,
I think everything,
if they lose,
I think everything you're bringing up kind of takes me back to pretty much where we went wrong in a capitalistic government. When we started combining capitalism and federal government, it's just that's a slippery slope. You know, I'm an old Joseph Campbell girl. You can't have both. You know, that's a treacherous road to go down, and I think the only way out to preserve democracy, like true democracy, is a real conscientious, grounded leader who lets corporate capitalistic entities resolve their own issues that may be terrible for some workers, but that they build a society, you know, through governing that protects those people. Like, I feel like that our government should still be the society builder with protections, and these mega entities have to duke it out on their own because they're just, you know, half of them are evil, and we've really mucked things up. We've mucked things up to a point that, you know, everybody's criticizing, the president, and I don't care who the president is, so I'm just going to say the president is getting into this but not this, the president got into this but not that. Like, there is no way, you know, just as a human being, you get invited to 5 parties. You can't be to all of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we've really gotten too broad into all of this because of money. And we lost our way on actual governing a society.
So if the government, I mean, I look at it a little bit this way, you know, companies that are operated for profit, and if they're not operated for a profit, then you have to ask yourself, what's the point of a firm that's operated at a loss? Okay. And you can't you can say something things like, well, your fire department, I mean, even if it's operated at a loss, we're going to operate it anyway. Or a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or something like this, right?
Some hospitals operated. Yeah.
On the other hand, if all of society's enterprises are operating at a loss, no, but there won't be any money to pay for anything. So the idea any company if you're producing something that is scarce, in other words, it's not abundant, you just can't walk out in your front yard and pick it out of your garden, the thing you wanted. Okay. If it's scarce, well, then, you know, there's nothing. There's probably no better system than capitalism for trying to allocate a market in such a way as to, you know, find a price that reflects both the utility and the amount of the cost of doing it, right? But, you know, the government can't operate that way because in a so-called market economy, mm-hmm. You know, when things are up, you need more workers. And when things are not, you need less. And if you want to grow, usually that means you have to accumulate capital, but it's because it's like a big investment to get all the shit together to produce something at scale or to do something big, like move a mountain. Okay. So you have those, mm-hmm. those kind of issues. And I think it's unreasonable. I think it's unreasonable to demand that a company act like a co-op. I mean, if there's any role for private enterprise at all, I mean, you can't tell them to say, well, you have to be.
Sure. I think a company should operate like a company, you know? Yeah.
Government
figure it out. Figure it the hell out. Yeah.
That's the problem. The government has to be like, okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Don't leave people behind. Okay. If innovation is going to get rid of the internal combustion engine and replace it with batteries, battery powered motors. Okay. Well, you know, what happens to all the people producing internal combustion engines? You know, you can't just say, oh, well, the market will take care of that. Because that's what the market won't take care of. Okay. I mean, it might if you're in a boom period, but on the average, no. You got to have.
Well, the majority of people in America aren't functioning off of the market. I'm sorry. You know, there is a huge population of us that our lives are not determined impersonally, like our bank accounts, our personal bank accounts are not affected by the market. and we're the ones doing a lot of work out there. We're doing a lot of work and we're keeping the wheels turning and keeping people's houses clean and their dogs walked and their gardens grown and hotel rooms clean.
How can you do it without a paycheck?
What is it?
Can you do any of that though without
you have to have a paycheck.
Well, so that part.
No.
I mean, you're in the market if you're the wages. Right? I don't know.
I'm saying there's always, we have gotten to a point of growth that there are plenty of people. I mean, I know more people that people like in jobs like I do, we are in such high demand. People with wealth are overtaking, like there's not enough of us.
Where are my servants?
And I have exactly. I mean, and I've worked in this industry for a long time and there's just not enough of us. And then some good old fashioned immigrants would be good right now.
Well, that's there you go. You know, if you got a shortage of labor, I mean, then having a very protectionist immigration policy might not. I don't know. It will raise your income, though. I mean, because there'll be fewer people to do it, and you can charge, in theory, a higher price, right? I mean,
you're right. That's anyway. if I wasn't an empath and had ethics and I'm just that's a whole nother show, John.
It is. Hey, oh, I was Lord. Going to go ahead.
I was gonna say, and then like I love these discussions during a time of despair, because I am, I've been struggling with loss. And at the end of the day, sometimes like right now, I'm looking through everything with a different lens, just because everything's very raw right now, having buried my mom and then my friend got murdered right then at the same time. And it's like, whoa, does everybody realize at the end of the day, there is no tomorrow? Like there's really not a tomorrow. You don't know if you're going to be the one or who's going to be the one, but
somebody.
And, really, what are we fighting for here? And that's where a good leader comes into play. Somebody that can make, without sounding hokey, just set the stage for, like, if we're really not all in this together, then there is no in this. 'Cause
that's true.
We're literally just at war at that point.
Hey, let me read this poem I have for you. I was It's by Stanley Kunitz, and Janet found it for a program we did last week. But it really moved me, and I don't even know all the reasons why. But I thought of it again when you sent me your note postponing last week's show, and I thought you might dig it. Is it okay to read it?
Thank you. Absolutely.
It's called The Layers by Stanley Kunitz. Stanley Kunitz was appointed by Clinton to be the poet laureate of the United States when he was 95 years old. Anyway, this is a poem he wrote back in 1970 when he was probably already, older than me. But anyway.
That's the year I was born.
That's called The Layers. Okay, there you go. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was. Though some principle of being abides, from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling toward the horizon and the slow fires trailing from the abandoned campsites over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true affections, and my tribe is scattered now. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. Yet I turn, exulting somewhat with my will intact to go wherever I need to go. And every stone on the road is precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered and I roamed through the wreckage, a nimbus-clouded voice directed me, live in the layers, not on the litter. And though I lacked the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter in my book of transformations is already written. I am not done with my changes. Isn't that great?
I would speak if I could, but yes, it's
great. It just blows me away. Anyway, are we done for today? I don't know.
We are.
All right.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank you for the conversation. Thank you for everybody out there.
All right. Okay.
Love. Oh.
All right. Adios. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.